The first case on calendar this morning is 72274, Public Employees Retirement System of Nevada, Nevada versus Nevada Policy Research et al. Justice Pickering is appearing by video from Las Vegas today. Otherwise, the court is fully constituted. With that, if parties are ready to proceed, please do so. State your name and please state if you wish to reserve any time.
Chief Justice Adam Austin Henner on behalf of the PERS, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Chief Justice and may it please the court. In 2013, this court unanimously decided PERS versus Reading Newspapers, which was almost factually identical to the current appeal. And that case had three essential parts. The first was that the files of the individual members or retirees were statutorily confidential. PERS has complied with that part of the holding by maintaining the confidentiality of these individual files. Second, Reno Newspapers held that in response to a public records request, PERS did not need to search through or compile the records of these individual files in order to create a new documentary report. PERS again has complied with that part of the holding by declining to produce a custom report to NPRI. And third, Reno Newspapers held that PERS was obligated to produce administrative reports or documents contained in separate media, even if that information was also contained in the individual files. Again, PERS has complied with this by providing these separate reports to NPRI and to other parties. PERS provided an annual comprehensive report that is sent to their independent actuary. It's called the raw data feed. And that report contains 28 fields of information for over 57,000 retirees. PERS also produces to NPRI and others something called the monthly payment register, which contains a retiree's name, gross payment amount, and net payment amount. And again, that's
so. So if somebody wants, like an elected official, wants to see what their retirement benefits are, what they've earned, that is available, and that's being provided by PERS to NPRI or anybody else in the general public?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
That information would be available to that member in their own personal account, but secondly, if they wanted to see an account of all the information of everyone's monthly and net and gross payments, those are provided by the monthly payment registers. And this, again, is in strict compliance with the Reno Newspapers decision, which says that any information contained in separate media is a public record should be disclosed. So when PERS receives public record requests for the separate media or these administrative reports, PERS produces those reports. This case involves something different than that, which is the creation of a new report out of the files of the individual members, and a report that's neither created by PERS, used by PERS, maintained by PERS, or has any relevance to the operation of PERS. So because PERS has complied with the three aspects of Reading Newspapers and explicitly complied with that, followed that blueprint exactly, PERS believes that this appeal is readily decided and should be quickly decided on the basis of that binding precedent from just 2013, which this court unanimously decided. We believe it's not possible to affirm the district court's ruling below without overturning the Reading Newspapers' decision. Given its strict compliance with Reno Newspapers, PERS believes it's even more unfortunate that it's again before this court on a public records case.
Counsel, should we be concerned with our other ruling, Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department versus Blackjack Bonding, where the court talked about reasonableness in light of the computer age and the ability to facilitate the information?
That case, again, was a panel decision, and it explicitly exempted and said that it wasn't overturning the newspapers. And it kept intact the entire holding of the newspapers, which was that PERS did not have to search through and compile information from individual reports. Blackjack Bonding is readily distinguishable, first, because it doesn't involve any confidential information. And second, Blackjack Bonding, the holding, was again not specific to a public agency. It helped with a third-party vendor who could possibly produce this information. And costlessly is important under the concept, as Your Honor pointed out, of readily available. But if that third-party vendor can costlessly and quickly produce that information, and in fact, in Blackjack Bonding, the issue was that the third-party vendor had produced to the agency a software program that was specifically designed to produce those callbacks. That's much different than here, where PERS does not have software that can quickly and expediently...
Counsel, if and I have it before me in the Blackjack Bonding case, and I disagree with your representation as to what it holds. It specifically talks about the fact that PERS did not address a situation where an agency had technology to readily comply with the requested information. So it exempted that kind of out. It didn't slam the door on it. It left it open. It talks about the reasonable nature of that. So the question is, in this technological age, and as has been indicated, you have a report where you do not have names. You have another monthly report which you demonstrated had names. Is it reasonably applicable to do so? And in the proceedings down below with the court, some figures were thrown out, but the figures weren't really appropriate for it being too costly to prepare or add that one dimension. Would you care to comment, please?
Yes, Your Honor. In Blackjack Bombing, it held that where an agency has a computer program that is essentially pre-programmed, and that's the Scanlon v. Skeeters case from Ohio. And I'll say that that argument that a public agency needs to create a public record is in sharp contrast with the holdings of almost every other jurisdiction. The only authority that has been able to be cited by NPRI, or indeed by the court making that decision in Blackjack Bombing, was a single case from Ohio. Every other decision, whether involving FOIA or the Public Records Act, holds that an agency doesn't have to produce a public record to create a new public record or even use a computer software to create a new public record. But I think Your Honor's point about this being a new technological age is really salient here, because the NPRA, the Public Records Act, was first brought into being in 1911, and it hasn't been updated too much since then. And the standard and too costly is really about what a public agency has to do in response to a public records request. Every public agency in Nevada, PERS included, believes this, or likely a public agency, believes that it doesn't have a duty to create a new public record. It believes that because it's been told explicitly in NNC Chapter 239 that it doesn't have a duty to create a new public record in response to a public records request. It believes that because the public records manual, which again is incorporated into law, NAC Chapter 239, says a public agency does not have a duty to create a new public record. And it believes that because this court told it in 2013 that PERS does not have a duty to search through its files and create a new public records request. And that duty extends whether it's going through and compiling two separate reports or going through the information that's in the confidential individual member files and creating a new document out of those confidential files. But specifically with respect to the test that this court has to use is whether, if Your Honor is suggesting that the test is whether a document is readily available to the computer program, we would submit that if the court wants to extend Blackjack Bombing to public agencies, that the test would be something like a public agency only needs to produce that document when it's the equivalent of creating an existing or obtaining and retrieving an existing record. So if the computer software is set up to print out that report, if it's a public library where you're searching by author, and that computer system is designed to create that report, and indeed that report is actually used and maintained in the process of these governmental functions, then that document can be a public record and possibly on the Blackjack Bombing that can produce. But where you actually have to program the computer software in order to create a new record, where the computer software again is a parsing database that occurs. And you know, this court is often familiar with all limitations of governmental technology. This is a software system that's 17 years old that requires an independent outside computer client to be able to do anything. In order to produce the person's annual report to the actuary, which is required by the Constitution, the person has to spend months to engage in
counsel, PERS didn't have any problems with changing their program in light of the court's prior order. So we get into a very delicate area of the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. And it seems that PERS has gone out of its way to violate the spirit of the law. The letter of the law is what you're arguing, and the letter of the law may be what the court is bound by. But your last statement about the antiquated system, it's just not saleable and was not argued or really produced readily down below in the district court. So that's kind of a slippery slope you're into right now.
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the spirit and the letter of the law is to keep this information confidential under NRS 286.110 and 117. That's the intent and the spirit of the law. This court's holding the Reno newspapers deviated from that to the extent that this confidential information is found in separate documents. PERS does not have a duty to create these separate documents. It doesn't have a duty to create documents that then must be disclosed as public records. If it doesn't create any documents, the information stays confidential in that system. that hasn't changed. But PERS has complied with the union decision by specifically producing all documents that it does as part of its operations, such as the monthly payment registers and the actuary.
So to better understand this problem, for me at least, could you comment on the raw data report? Appears that this dispute centers around the change of what was included in the raw data report from 1 year to the next. So what were the circumstances behind the change, and why was certain information that was available 1 year not available in the next year?
Justice Hardesty, I disagree with Justice Douglas's characterization that it was changed in response to the 2013 decision. There's nothing in the record to support that. The only witness.
Well, setting aside anybody's intent or whatever, there was a change, wasn't there, in the raw data report?
Correct.
So what I'm trying to understand is your argument focuses on the availability of technology or the absence of a report. This situation seems to be one in which PERS produced a report, a raw data report, and then changed the raw data report subsequent year, removing certain data. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
So how did that change come about? Why were those, it's not a situation where one is asking PERS to produce a report they no longer produce. It's a case in which they were producing a report and have now removed information from that report. Isn't that what we're dealing with here factually?
Factually, we really don't have much of an idea what NPRI's actually requesting.
Well, let's just focus on the report. We'll let NPRI's counsel explain that. Excuse me?
The raw data feed, that changes yearly based on conversations with the actuary. And it's driven by what the independent actuary needs. So just the year prior to that, two additional fields were added, the ER paid and the contingency field. So these fields change all the time based on what the actuary needs. Even NPRI concedes the actuary has no need for the names of the retirees. This is a statistical function. It doesn't matter what the names of the retirees
are. But to your argument about not requiring PERS to produce certain reports, as discussed in the Reno newspaper case, apparently, they were producing the raw data report that included the names of various recipients, right?
They were, and when they were doing that, they were under the impression, based on the advice from the Attorney General, that that report, which was an in-house report to an independent agency, was a confidential report.
But then in the next year, they removed those names.
And the only evidence is that the actuary didn't need the names in the system.
But the cause of the removal wasn't because you were being required to produce a report that you weren't otherwise producing. You just removed the names. Apparently, you had the capability to produce names before, right?
And PERS retains the capability to produce names. But what Reno newspaper says is not PERS has a duty to create a document with names on it. PERS only has a duty to produce documents that it has already created. PERS has no duty to produce any document that has the names of retirees or information contained in the Reno newspaper's decision. The only duty is to produce the documents that, in response to public records requests, that are created outside of the individual member files.
Did the district court take testimony on the reasons behind the change and whether this impacted PERS's computer capabilities?
The reason behind the change of the removal of names?
Yes,
it did, and the only testimony came from one of our witnesses, Cheryl Price, who testified that she was not a party to those communications with the actuary and said possibly. And the district court took a lot of liberty to say that that decision possibly meant that definitely PERS removed those names in response to the newspaper's decision. And if there are no other questions, I'd like to save the balance of my time.
Counsel, I'm going to give you, you have 1:19, I'm going to give you a full 3 minutes. I'll add 2 minutes to the counsel's time.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Joseph Becker. I'm here on behalf of Nevada Policy Research Institute in this matter. You heard a lot about the fact that NPR, I'm sorry, the PRIS has no duty to create a new record, but that's not really an issue in this case. Because everything, according to NRS 239.0056B, official state record includes without limitation information stored on a computer. I would have quoted then the case that you, Chief Justice, already quoted, and that is the language in the Blackjack Bonding case, which says, you know, I mean, it doesn't specifically say this is a new computer age, but it says that the PERS case against me in the newspapers did not deal with the issue of, you know, going in and extracting these records. According to the Nevada State Manual, which PERS acknowledges in its pleadings as having the force of law and did again today, the statutorily undefined term public record is to include everything within NRS 239.080. It includes everything stored on a government computer. So how is one to access, in this computer age, these public records, but to do a query of that computer, assuming that the software exists to do that?
So Mr. Becker, I assume you don't want the employee's Social Security number or their date of birth?
The client never requested any of those things. In fact, we got more information in the raw data feed than NPRI ever wanted. I mean, their whole purpose is a policy organization is to point out, you know, upcoming fiscal problems and prevent fraud.
Okay, well, I think your opposing counsel said in the argument he wasn't sure exactly what NPRI wanted. Maybe you could briefly tell us to make sure we understand it and they can respond to it.
It is. I would have to refer to my notes.
Well, just give us the gist of it.
But basically it's the name, it's the years of service, it's the last position held, it's the amount of pay and benefits being received by the recipient, and it's one other thing, but it's not address, it's not birth date, it's not gender, it's not Social Security number, it's not any of those things.
We try to make financial calculations.
In the record is the email exchange between NPRI and Mr. Fellner of NPRI and PERS. It's very clear what it is that it's being requested, but it's generally for those five categories.
Okay.
The response is they don't have a report that covers those items.
That's true, but of course, and while we would agree they have no duty to create a new public record, that's not what's going on here. The public record is what's stored in the computer itself. I think the court sort of didn't get that, and, you know, with all due respect, didn't get that in PERS v. Reno newspapers, but I think they sort of figured that out in Blackjack Bonding, which is, you know, why when you look at the case, it says it distinguishes, or it you know, it's distinguished from PERS v. Reno newspaper.
In these circumstances, and this is what's troubling to me about this record, wouldn't it be necessary for the parties in district court to litigate what issues are involved in obtaining this information if it's not already part of a readily available document?
Well, one of the reasons that wasn't necessary is because, you know, something I would talk about a little bit later was going to, and that is this this duty to compile. And Justice Hardesty, you already pointed out that, you know, there's this monthly payment register which has the Social Security number redacted but has names. There is, of course, the raw data feed actuary report, which has the Social Security number and the other fields that NPRI requested. It came to us in Excel, Microsoft Excel. So most of us are familiar with that software. There was testimony from NPRI's witness that said, with those two public records, even by their own admission, and a common data field, that it would be very easy and the computer software would be available to merge those two documents and come up with the very thing that NPRI asked for. I think it's not so complex that even, you know, non-computer people can't figure that out. I think the other issue that the court really needs to think about is this whole notion of confidentiality. I mean, if the court under blackjack bonding now understands that information stored on a public computer is the public record, and the extraction of that is simply the way that public record is accessed, then the other issue here with respect to at least whether they can release it or not is the statutory confidentiality, confidentiality statute.
Counsel, on confidentiality, it seems that in the proceedings down below, the court was fairly clear that they determined certain things confidential and it was not disputed as the Social Security numbers, things of that nature, and sex and things of that nature. And that goes into one of the balancing issues that the court gets into in terms of talking about privacy, talking about ability, theft of information, identity, which the court basically threw away and dealt in a very narrow area about the availability of this information and got into, not clearly, but the holding in blackjack. So that's the delicate little area we're dealing with right now and trying to understand. They've made the argument that the report is not readily available. You're disputing that. This other argument is, from my standpoint at least, I don't know about my colleagues, is not what really has been teed up by the proceedings below.
Right, except if indeed under blackjack bonding what is stored in the government computer is indeed the public record.
And so the fact that a Social Security number is stored in a government computer, does that make it something that's not confidential? Does that change the nature of it?
It does not. It does make it a public record, however. Now the question is, you know, they're invoking NRS
28. Why should it be? Strike my question. Go ahead and continue. We're going down an avenue we don't really need to go down.
Well, I think so. The court doesn't have to keep rehearing this case. I mean, if under blackjack bonding, what's stored in a government computer is a public record, then we would be entitled to that, assuming it can be extracted, you know, in some sort of reasonable way by a computer program. We know they can extract the information that we ask for. I mean, that's how they create the raw data feed and the monthly register in the first place. I mean, the court is aware that they changed, of course, what they asked their computer program to retrieve on the heels of the Reno newspaper's decision. But the court still has to deal, I think, with this issue of what, because PERS has put everything that formerly was on paper when the confidentiality statute was enacted into the Carson database around about the year 2000, they're claiming that everything in there is confidential unless they just happen to create a report, and they claim they're under no obligation to do that. But the district court asked them point blank, does this mean that the legislature can't see anything that's in the Carson database? And the answer from PERS was yes. And the government, the answer was no, the government can't either. You know, no one's entitled to see this except PERS. That certainly is not in the spirit of the Public Records Act. The only points I really want to make about the confidentiality statute is they're interpreting, and the court, again, with all due respect, I think has interpreted that over broadly. If you take a look at the legislative history, if you take a look at the California cases, it said, hey, we have a similar, you know, term that's not really defined in the statute. We have to make some sort of a decision about whether that means we can't get any information from, you know, from our retirement system agency at all. They clearly decided, and in those courts or those cases, I cited them both. It's you know, San Diego County employees and Sacramento County employees, very clear on this, that there's no way that that confidentiality statute could be interpreted to mean that. I mean, if you look at you know, the language in NRS reads, any exemption, or balancing of interest which limits or restricts access to public books and records by members of the public must be construed narrowly. We know that. Again, this court, as recently as Parks v. Reno newspaper in August of last year, said that in order, in particular, the court will presume that all public records are open to disclosure unless the legislature has expressly and unequivocally created an exemption or exception by statute. I think the court does need to, in order to not have to keep hearing these arguments, the court is going to have to revisit that issue of whether the confidentiality statute covers everything that they've now labeled as being an individual member file in this big database, such that no one can access it unless they decide they can access it. It really seems to fly in the face of the spirit and the language of the Public Records Act. And if you go back and look at the legislative history, I think you'll learn that there is that it wasn't intended to cover everything that happens to be labeled by them now as an individual member file in their Carson database. The last point I think I really want to make is even
back up and just comment a little bit that there was some discussion on the record because we're kind of in a strange position. We're talking about present tense and we're talking about past tense, and what was before the court was providing the information requested for the 2014 period, and there was a discussion about the cost that might be incurred or not incurred, and that wasn't clearly developed in the record and the ability to even go back and get it at this point, because that was a factual predicate that came to us, even though you're arguing the bigger picture of how PERS should in the future look at this. And so that's kind of the dilemma as to that particular request that was before the court. There was an argument that it would be difficult and very costly to put the information together for your particular request at the time in question. Accurate, inaccurate from your standpoint?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Well, we, of course, don't know exactly when they change various data points. The problem is if the court doesn't hold that they have a duty to do that going forward. I mean, at this point, the 2014...
The statute is clear. They can ask you to pay to recoup the cost of doing certain things if they have to run, quote, a special report.
Of course, they never did, right? They never mentioned...
But that's a consideration the court semi-looked at, so that's why I'm asking you to comment.
My comment is that they never... My comment is that they never said that the report was ever available, even if we paid for it. They just flat out denied it. The issue of the money that it would cost to do it, which I believe is $1,300, from my memory in their affidavits, rather, not their expert affidavits, but PERS personnel affidavits, that was the first time after we sued them that they mentioned that. The danger is, of course, if we can't get a precedent that says they have to do this, you know, there'll never be a time, because by the time you sue them, of course, the records, according to them, will have been changed. So, you know, it's one of those situations where using the lawsuit, you know, capable of repetition yet evading review, makes us a problem, because it'll always have changed by the time, you know, the lawsuit gets to the point that it is now. The last point that I really wanted to make is, even if we were wrong, and I don't think we are, and I don't think you think we're wrong either, that the extraction of data stored on a government computer is not creating a new public record, it's merely accessing the record that already exists. Even if we're wrong about that, and even if we're wrong that the confidentiality statute is being interpreted too broadly so as to make everything that PERS has confidential, the fact is they produced a public record, a monthly payment register in Excel, and gave it to us that they admitted had the Social Security numbers and the names before they redacted the socials. They also produced in Excel a record they say is public, the raw data feed, which contained Social Security number, which of course was redacted, and all the other information that we asked for. Even if the data files are confidential, even if they have no duty to create a new report, under blackjack bonding, they still have a duty to compile those two records, such as to give us what this court ordered them to give us in 2013, in which they have a program which clearly can produce just as it produced the raw data feed in the monthly payment register. And with that, unless there are other questions, I would reserve the balance.
Succinctly, if the court accepted your position, how would the court write it? Because I listened to what you just said, and you're asking them to compile, in essence, back to this argument of creating a new record. So how do we get around that?
Can you re-ask the question, please? You lost me there somewhere.
You talked about combining two reports, which, without Webster's in front of me, seems to be compiling a new record. How do we get around that to write a decision that would concur with what you're putting forward?
Well, it's not compiling. It's not creating a new record. Use the word compiling, but it's not creating a new record.
New document, then.
A new document is not a public record, a new public record. A document is merely the extraction of information which is already a public record. As you pointed out, the language in Blackjack Bonding and the language you read seems to point out. All this is merely combining two documents which can be easily combined under Excel, as was testified to in the trial court, to give the name and the data fields that was requested by MPRI. It's not creating a new record. It may be creating a new document, but that's completely different because the public record is what's stored on the computer, and accessing it is how this gets done in this modern age by using a software program to either extract and reveal or even combine records already admitted as public by PERS that existed at the time we requested the information.
Any additional questions from colleagues or Justice Pickering down in Las Vegas?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of PERS.
Thank you, Justice. I completely agree that this case involves very weighty discussions and decisions about the future of the Nevada's Public Records Act, especially in this technological age. But the problem here is that we have records so poor because not even today can MPRI tell you what you requested. And this is all traceable back to when first made a motion for a more definite statement that was denied by the district court. We still don't know exactly what MPRI has requested. They filed a petition seeking eight categories of information that they never requested in a public records request. Certainly it offends due process to require PERS to litigate against such a target that even the district court called a moving target.
Mr. Hosmer, can I interject? So I want to make sure I understand the request. Just as it relates to names, because you're talking about eight categories, five categories. My understanding is in 2014, the information that you developed for the actuary is requested by MPRI. It's been provided to them. Because you no longer provide names to the actuary and those names are in the confidential files, the request is that you extract the names from the confidential files and you collate them essentially, I might be using the wrong word, with the information provided to MPRI to create a document that they can use to match those names to their retirement amounts. Is that roughly correct?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. But every year, PERS produces an actuary report.
Yeah.
And we didn't take names out of that actuary report before it was sent to MPRI. The document was never created with names in the first place. It wasn't created with some of the other. So it was created with 28 categories of information. The social security numbers were redacted, and then that massive spreadsheet was provided to MPRI. MPRI then said, you create a new version of this document with names attached. And PERS responded, we have no such document, and we are not required under the public records law jurisprudence to create a new document for you in the field of information.
And where would the names come from?
The names would come only from the Carson database. All this information only comes from the Carson database. And the actuary fee, Carson database is a problem, and it takes a new program each year to generate those 28 fields of information for the 57,000 retirees. So all of these documents that we're discussing require the creation of a new program.
But the names were in the 2013 raw data report that was supplied to the actuary.
That program was designed, and the computer program was programmed in order to include names in the report that were 2014 computer program did not include that software code in order to extract those names.
Uh-huh. So what was the reason for that?
There's nothing in the record.
So perhaps that's why the judge said on page 7 of the order, the lack of evidence that producing the requested information for retiree name, years of service, gross pension benefit amount, year of retirement, and last employer would require unreasonable demands or costs on PERS. Wasn't the burden on you to demonstrate to the district court that this was a burdensome request?
That burden specifically was not on us because that wasn't what NPRI requested. Again, the district court...
That's a different issue. You're saying that that information that the judge that I just recited out of the judge's order was not part of their request. Is that what you're saying?
That those five categories of information would have been included in some of NPRI's requests. But again, we have...
was part of the request. Those five categories were part of NPRI's request. Do you agree or disagree?
I agree, Your Honor.
Okay. So now you say we can't provide you with this. And in district court, isn't it PERS's responsibility to show them that it's an unreasonable burden on the government to produce this request?
There's a burden to show that information is confidential.
Who owns that burden?
PERS has a burden to show that it's confidential. There's no burden to show that it's an unreasonable request because the status of the law is that PERS does not have to create a new public record regardless of the cost of the law and that request. So there's no balancing test that has ever been applied by this court to show how extensive a document is or how burdensome it is to create versus the necessity of providing that response to a public record.
Do you agree with your opponent's observation that it would cost $1,300 to produce this information?
For this specific report, yes, it would require 2 days of staff time and $1,300 in response to one of NPRI's requests. And we think that here, since there's no duty at all to produce a new report, that burden is unreasonable, especially because there's no limitation on what a public agency has to do in response to these innumerable public requests. PERS receives these requests daily, and the effect on state and local government budgets by not only having to respond to public record requests with existing records, but to create new public records is really incalculable. And it's not just one request. Whether the court is going to change public records jurisprudence to require a public agency to expend those funds every single time a public record is created.
My issue, Mr. Hosmer, is that I get your point, but shouldn't that be vetted in the district court? Shouldn't the parties come in and tell the trial court, look, this is overburdensome. We can't just press a button. Counsel says that the testimony in the district court was you could simply combine these two reports and come up with this information. And it sounds like the cost is, at least for this request, is relatively minimal. So why wouldn't the government be expected to at least demonstrate that this is a burdensome problem?
Well, we did, Your Honor. During my direct examination trial process, I asked, was it factually possible for PERS to create a fiscal year 2014 report from Carson? And the answer is no, it's not factually possible. We don't have the burden to show that something that can't be done is really expensive. Mm-hmm. We cannot create that retroactive report, which is the reason that the public records law doesn't require the creation of new reports after the fact. So we provided that evidence. Then PERS provided evidence about the cost to compile the two reports, because that was another one of NPRI's shifts. And in response to that, we said, if it could be done, it could be done for 2 days of staff time plus $1,300. So we provided that evidence to the district court, and the district court found that because we provided that evidence with respect to the 8 categories of information that NPRI actually requested, we didn't sufficiently document the 5 categories of information that the district court ordered to be produced. We never had the opportunity to specifically respond to that because NPRI didn't request that as a public records request. They didn't request that in the petition. And we think it certainly offends due process to require NPRI to litigate against the public records request that was never made. Their first petition in this case sought 8 categories of information. They never made a public records request just for those 8 categories of information. So the disconnect between their public records request, what they were argued in the district court, and what the district court ultimately found, there's a disconnect between each one of those 3 things. And PERS simply cannot argue a public records request, records case, and provide that type of evidence that you're discussing without being able to actually know what it is they have to respond to.
Any additional questions? Counsel, thank you. We thank counsel for both sides for their arguments today. It's within the presentation you were making, and that was given to you. They're allowed the last word. So with that, this matter stands submitted at this time.